Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I am Dan.
I am Sean.
Episode 161 of this podcast with three new singles, three new albums, albums from Kiara, Future Islands, and Everything Everything, and just a little sprinkling of news here and there because it was one of those slim pickings weeks. I'm going to see how fast I can do all this stuff. Power Report, the podcast, make sure you subscribe to it. There's a new episode up called 40 Ways to Fight Fascists. That's a really interesting interview that I did. Make sure you check that out, powerreport.world, to subscribe to the podcast. And the videos of that are at youtube.com/danfromtheinternet. We were going to do debate coverage later this week. The second debate got canceled. If there is a second debate, then we will cover that on Power Report as well. So youtube.com/danfromtheinternet, twitch.tv/danfromtheweb. And on the Audio Face side of things, we just did a Beba Doobie bonus episode. Make sure you check that out. Friend of the show, Annie, said, I wanted to hate her and I can't. So, like, there's your approval right there. Beba Doobie's really good. We've also got a bonus episode coming up on Gorillaz that will be, like, kind of run-through of the Gorillaz discography from the first album to the now. All the way leading up to Song Machine, which should be coming out soon. So make sure you subscribe to Audio Face so you don't miss any of that stuff. Before we get into the news, let's start with the singles.
Yes.
First one was Gorgeous by St. John. St. John kind of blew up a couple years ago.
With the Roses.
Yeah.
And like some remixes. I remember the one from Future. And there's like a big EDM mix that got really big, right?
Yeah. And so he's going to come out now with like a proper real album, I think, soon. The others have been like mixtapes. You know, you're in that pre-artist stage.
Right.
Now he's blown up and done his first thing. Mm. It's very clunkily I'm making this reference, but it's like the Beba Doobie moment he has to release an album and then he like sort of blows up. But Gorgeous is the first single to come from that. Change tonight. This I did it for real. This I lived it for real. Just a suffrage. I might buy six chains tonight. This I did it for real. This I lived it for real. Just a suffrage. Hey. Stacey got the brib and a brand new bag. It's like really,
it's all right.
Yeah, that's all right. Run the mill.
Run the mill trap. Nothing wild, nothing crazy.
Because
it sounds like Meek Mill almost, so.
Meek Mill, that's a pretty interesting one. I guess I could see that. He's got like a decent enough flow. It's like nothing I can rag on or say this
is
garbage.
Exactly.
So it's just like, it's passable, it's good. I was never the biggest like, oh, check out Roses. This is an incredibly good song. It's like, I heard it, I saw it popped up and around.
Yeah,
it's cool.
You heard it a lot.
I
heard it a lot.
Hopefully St. John kind of graduates from the sort of elevator R&B kind of realm he's in right now. It's just sort of like, you know, it's inoffensive. It's like in the background, it's fine. I will say that St. John has at least got bars, more than I can say for Gunna.
Yeah, and there's a single, Praise by Chami and Gunna.
Yeah.
And
Chami has had a bit of a year.
Yeah.
In addition to being like a really good electronic music artist and one of my favorites in the future house genre, he also produced several big songs on Lady Gaga's album Chromatica, which was very critically acclaimed.
Very good album.
And also Chami on here on this song continues to just like come with really sort of like off the beaten path, you wouldn't expect it kind of beats in production. That's good. Unfortunately,
except he has Gunna on it, which is the worst feature. One of the worst features you can put on there because it just did not fit.
Yeah, Gunna doesn't. When Wanna came out earlier this year, I kind of praised a little bit for the fact that the production fit Gunna in that it wasn't like, it was all of elevator trap on
there. Yeah,
it wasn't trying too hard, neither is Gunna ever. Mm. And so that's that. But when you put Gunna on a record with like a proper producer like Chen,
he gets phased out and you can see.
Yeah. It really helps you appreciate good rapper producer pairings. We just talked about
Twenty
One Savage
Boomin.
And Metro Boomin, of course. But yeah, there's a lot of that out there. And another one, just because we'd like to keep it a curveball for you
super
here on Audio
random.
Face, Heart Smile by Diggs Duke. Diggs Duke is a very like indie sort of jazz-ish sort of musician. I've only heard of him in my life because I have the wonderful convenience of being his first cousin. So
really?
Yes.
That is hilarious.
Yes. He also released, talking with him, because like I get to talk to an up-and-coming musician and just like watch him do it and go through all the things. So he released this album in Japan earlier this year, or the single that this album is coming off of. But in America, he's releasing the album off of this platform called Co-Write. And I want to interview someone who works at Co-Write because it's very interesting.
Never heard of Co-Write either.
Co-Write is kind of like Patreon or Kickstarter, where like you are a band or artist and you ask people for money, but the people who are giving you money are actually kind of like investing in you as an artist. So they also recuperate some of the profits from whatever you make from that year. So it's kind of like a stock market for artists, supposed to like give a little bit more power and control over back to artists. I have a lot of questions about the business model, though, that I'm asking my cousin about on the side, but I also want to talk to the developers of this. Anyways,
that's a very interesting idea.
It was very interesting to me. So this is me like planting the seed to begin a bunch of other different conversations here. But Art's Model, the song itself, it's very, he's typical sort of like jazzy sort of thing that he goes through. It's very sort of light and airy as well at the same time. It has like a lot of sax in it. Something to cause me to need you. Well, I gave me my portion of food and now I want to feed you. I need your comfort more than bread. You took my mind and left my soul for dead.
Make my heart smile. You make my heart smile. You make my heart smile.
He's just like,
I like the sax a lot.
He's just a very, he's really good with sax. He's just like a multi-instrumentalist, just like fucking around with
it. Oh, it's all him? Guy.
Yeah, all him. He's doing everything. Got a collaborator to help with the singing and backing vocals, but he's doing everything.
Oh, he's playing all the instruments.
Singing instruments, all that. He's really good. Check that out. Shameless plug. But I really, mostly the fact that it's being distributed by Co-Write and it has all these really kind of interesting layers within it, I think should be pretty interesting.
It wasn't bad. It was very different, but in a good way.
Yes.
Because it just felt like it's just basic instrumentation and vocals. That's it. No floofs, nothing about, gonna wanna.
We keep it on audio face. Very varied, let's say.
Exactly.
Yes. Various news we've got here.
Speaking of very varied.
And this is truly our one like top story of the week on Audio Face, so we'll spend a second on it.
And then one that we like to talk about.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be hilarious. So Tory Lanez, and the latest in the Tory Lanez Megan Thee Stallion saga that we've been covering almost too much here on Audio Face, has been charged with assault officially for his little incident with Meg Thee Stallion and the foot shooting thing. You know what podcast you're listening to, so I'm not gonna re-explain the whole story. But who's officially charged. His court date is October 13th. So that'll be happening this Monday, where we'll see like what his possible sentence could be.
Right.
Of course, it has to go through. I mean, this is an arraignment hearing, so not your official full court date, sit down, do all this stuff. But if found guilty, Tory Lanez faces a maximum prison sentence of 22 years and 8 months.
Remember why I nominated him for the Not a Little Bitch Award? This is a good reason why, because turns out, dog, you did it. And you just said, oh, I didn't do it. She complained. All this stuff against Meg. Oh, Meg's like, dog, you shot me in the foot. What do you want
to
do?
Meg tried as hard as she could to not snitch.
Yeah, she did. She didn't tell the cops nothing. She gave you a way out. And you still are like, nah, it's her fault. Nothing. None of this happened. Look at all this stuff that her... her company's doing against me, or her label, her label's doing against me, all this
her
stuff.
Fans.
You know what? No, dog.
He tweeted...
Just get to prison.
He tweeted partially in emojis, which is, you know how it's good. Time will tell, and the truth will come to light. I have all faith in God to show that. Love to all my fans and people who have stayed true to me and know my heart. A charge is not a conviction. If you have supported me or Meg through this, I genuinely appreciate you.
Well, I ain't gonna be there for you in jail, dog.
Yeah, he ain't gonna be able to have Twitter in jail. Also, the idea that, maybe OnlyFans, the idea that you would drag Meg into your, like, covering your ass, cowering apology, lying apology thing is, like,
it's very disrespectful to her and everything, because she is the victim. She's the one who got shot, had to go through all the things, then still gets up on stage and stuff in SNL and brings the house down and all this stuff and does WAP and brings the house down there and everything.
Savage, but yes. Meg Thee Stallion did.
She was also in WAP.
And she was also on WAP, but I don't know if she performed that on SNL, because I truthfully don't watch SNL. No. I only saw the Savage performance.
But I know WAP was after, I'm pretty sure it was after she got shot, so.
I'm thinking about things separately. Yes, she also did do WAP, and that was the song of the year, essentially. So, yeah, you're right on that, absolutely. Fuck this guy. There's a reason he got nominated for the Notable Bitch, and he is
leading the charge right now. He's Napoleon over there, be like, paint me big because I'm short.
Now, now remember, it would not be unknown in Audio Face for literally the last minute a Noted Little Bitch nominee to win, because that happened with the Butterfly Doors.
Butterfly Doors, yep.
But, a remarkable lead going on right now with that. And we move into our first album, Lil Kiwi by Kiara. It is 13 songs and 37 minutes long. Kiara, this is kind of like her first proper album, because she reached a little bit of prominence and prevalence with the lead single that came off of this, Gold. You love me, but you never let me go. And the roof was on fire, you never let me know. Say you're sorry, honey, but you never really show me. Came out in 2017, 2018, to my knowledge. Again, we know
a few years ago,
those years. And it was a really good song in kind of that we didn't have a way to describe this, but a lot of time in the late tens, a lot of R&B was experimenting with darker bass, deeper bass, subtracting elements of songs, thing that kind of became like the new dark pop that Billie Eilish and a lot of other musicians, now Charlie XCX, are kind of pioneering in the 20s. We've talked about how like R&B and pop are essentially the same thing. It's just R&B tends to be just called black people music. But it's very wide kind of scoping. And there's definitely a little bit more instrumental depth here than normal pop music. As for the... I changed my opinion of this album very kind of as I listened through it.
Yes, I had the same with me as well.
Yeah, I want to know how you changed your opinion, because mine's very specific to Kiara, but...
Mine was the first maybe like 4 or 5 songs where I didn't get into it until the last 3 or 4 songs, and then I had another listen to the album, and then I understood it.
Yeah,
because the first, it just felt like, probably because we did... what was the song with Ice Cream in it, with the K-pop band? I can't think of the
name. I know which one you're talking about.
But anyways, when we reviewed them, and it was more like your general pop, and I was like kind of like listening to general pop or whatever, and I'm like, it's whatever.
With Selena Gomez, the Blackpink one.
Yeah, Blackpink, there you go. And with Kiwi, like, because you have like, Don't Get Confused, I'm like, this sounds like just mall pop. I'm like, all right, well, like, it's nothing really crazy or whatnot. And then I got down like the last couple of songs, like, Accidental, I liked a little bit more, and that's when I can kind of, even though I had stupid trap snare and stuff into it, but the vocals and everything, I'm like, okay, now it's like more of that R&B, I don't know what you want to call it, dark and B, whatever you want to call it, even though it sounds extremely racist, but you know what, that's what the Academy does.
Yeah, definitely the Academy.
That's the one time you should listen to Tyler, the Creators with R&B.
Yeah, that was a legendary thing. But where you're kind of getting at is the latter half of the album is where you really kind of get the sauce.
Yeah.
I'd say it starts a little bit with Whippin' featuring Felix Snow. And I'm going in a random order and I'm going to go back to the top. But I promise we'll get there for a reason. When I first heard this album, I wasn't kind of sure where Kiara was in her like eras. I wasn't sure if she had like moved on from Gold or like was staying into that. Because a lot of my first sort of... And yeah, Gold's a good like sort of song to start this off with for sure. But I was listening to the album and thinking, this sounds like what happens with an artist sometimes. They have one really good hit song, and then their album is just permutations of that hit song. And I was definitely concerned about that, especially when you get down to Whippin' with Felix Snow, which I think to be one of the songs I like a little bit more in the whole album. In the beginning, a lot of it also goes back into this 2017-2018 Kiara phase of even the topicality of the subject matter of the music, where it's basically just like in between a toxic relationship, you're jealous, I'm jealous, all this different stuff.
The stuff that we've heard throughout.
Yeah, and there's usually not only stuff we've heard a lot, but stuff that, like, literally Ciara made a hit song about in Gold in 2018. So when you see that Gold is kind of like the centerpiece of this album still and everything else is flowing around that, I understood that, okay, yes, this is meant to be a continuation of that song and that album. And it's supposed to, like, fit more thematically together. Near the end of the album, I will say, though, the theme sort of pick up and adjust a little bit, which is a little bit of a relief.
But still, like, it's nothing insane to me. It's nothing special. It's okay. It's decent R&B/pop. It's nothing wild, but it will get into that mall pop, as I like to say, where, like, I've heard this production before. I've heard it 1,000 times up and over and whatnot. So, but to have that much time for one song, I'd want it to at least have a little bit more variation, a little bit more deviation, per se. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see when she does more music later on and see what direction she goes into, because I swear I've heard this 1,000 times. The last 3 songs are decent, though. I'll give her that. But then the rest, especially like the first half, like, So Sick, Down a Whip In, I'm like, okay, this is just...
Yeah.
Eh.
I think Never Let You is a bit of a highlight, because you get a little bit of, like, rock aspects of it, electronic music aspects of it. It's the most sort of dark pop kind of song that's within here. It almost reminds me of, I guess, beat-wise, Zoo's Testarossa music, where, it's, like, not quite electronic, but it's very, like, electronic influenced by, like, the heavy rock guitar.
Yeah, naturally.
It gives me a lot of that vibe, because, again, this is also a 2017, 2018 era kind of thing.
And you can hear it for sure, because, like, some of these songs, I swear to God, you watch a Netflix show or something, some random Netflix show, and it comes into, like, when it's, like, a break in between scenes, like, some of these songs pop in there for sure, like, you know it.
Yeah, it just feels incredibly generic. It's, like...
Yeah, very like, generic. I couldn't think of the bloody word.
It's the sound of...
That era.
Not only that, it's like this, even though it was the sound of that era in the 2018, it was really kind of reaching its peak around then, it was still very much the sound of 2013. That was like ripped from alternative of that time and electronic at that time before you kind of got the mid-10s disaster
Yeah, exactly. Because 2013 was an interesting year within music, because a lot of stuff changed around then. You also got some amazing shit in 2013 too, so that's just a weird year. But anyways... Arbitrary Scale this week is kidnapped political leaders, because
Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, almost the plot got foiled against her, thankfully, with the with the right wing extremists who were upset that they had to wear a mask.
Who were they? They were the ANCAPs, right?
I'm not sure exactly who they were. I don't want to misname them, because it wasn't Proud Boys per se,
but they're
sovereign citizenist types, essentially.
ANCAPs.
Whatever.
Anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to give this...
Militiamen.
Militiamen, yes. well-regulated militia. Well-regulated militia. Because there is no, like, list here, because this is one of our, like, uncouth irreverent scales, I'm going to make up scenarios here. This is going to be if Jay Inslee, the old governor of Washington State, were kidnapped by Greenpeace... and forced to, like, swim with salmon in, like, a fishing, sort of, like, game and fishing thing. To sort of, like, see how it feels.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is the failed coup attempt in, this is the Bay of Pigs failed coup attempt to go and kidnap Fidel Castro.
JFK, like, back in the day we used to call him Fee Diddy.
He's my friend Fee Diddy. It's actually his birthday.
Fidel Castro's birthday. Yeah, so I was going to call my buddy I was going to call my buddy Vladimir.
You know, at least I'll give Vladimir some credit. You know you know Vladimir gets down. You know Vladimir kills people. So it's not like Trump's over here acting all macho, and then he's all his followers like, oh, he got COVID. He's going to be this big thing. You know, at least give Putin some credit. He just kills people. Like, you know, on his list, like, you know, disappeared journalists. You know he's done the work himself. It's like, all right, he gets his hands dirty.
I'm sure he, like, actually manufactures the medicine used to poison poison journalists and Ukrainian opposition leaders.
God.
Anyway,
music business worldwide.
Slim pickings.
Oh, baby.
Spotify has filed a lot of really weird patents lately. You just want to close that. But one of the weirder ones that our friend of the podcast, Music Business Worldwide, has discovered and gotten hold of is a patent that says, or I'll read from it, it is possible to identify a personality trait of a user based on the content, example, music, that the user consumes, example, listens to, and the context in which they consume the content, which is very much like content, 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 content.
That's a straight up 1984 right there.
Yeah, so if I could get the idea, it basically takes in information about your behavior either through a quiz you take when you open the app, and a lot of onboarding processes for apps do this. You open Netflix or Hulu for the very, very, very first time, it tells you what shows you're into. So it like it helps build a recommendation algorithm off of you. Spotify is going to go a little further, where instead of going like, hey, what music do you like? It's going to give you things, or at least the patent is proposing things like the Myers-Briggs like personality test, or the different five personality traits that you have, like the big five inventory, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism, all those. And basically with this knowledge, Spotify will be able to serve advertisements that are best suited for the user. So one example they were talking about is using like a happier, louder voice for an advertisement and having another version of that advertisement in a softer voice to appeal to extroverts versus introverts. So basically, like, you've had this ad technology has been evolving. Ad technology has been
evolving. I see what it's for now.
Ad technology has been evolving, especially since the advent of the internet, where we went from, we just put a billboard up somewhere on the road and we hope a bunch of people see it, to, because everyone's internet experience is customized, we can show custom ads on the same web page tied to a user, which is why, like, whenever you go, like, you start searching something that you want to buy, and you look on Amazon, you look on any other website, all of a sudden, all your ads.
Or you just talk about it, and you go on Facebook, and Zuckerberg's like, here's this funny thing you talked about.
Yeah. Instagram's
but I don't do anything with politics.
Instagram's like, oh, I see you're talking about banana bread. Well,
here's a link to Trader Joe's banana bread. It's really good.
Probably be Whole Foods, considering it's Zuck and Bezos, but, it's very, I don't know how to feel about this, and also
I never like it because I don't like having that much information of myself per se, but now I'm just gonna fuck with it now if they actually implement it, because I'm just gonna start listening to his random. The nice thing of the podcast is we listen to a lot of random shit every week. So they're like, what's your personality? Schizophrenia. I'm like, you know.
Yeah, the fun thing about doing this podcast is that, like, if I were doing a TV reviews podcast, this would be the same thing. My Netflix would just make no sense because I'm love watching everything, so it can't really make a recommendation.
That's my thing with my Spotify. I guess it always goes into like my Daily Mix one would be stuff like my meat and potatoes listening, where I just listen to it all the time as my palate cleansers, you know, my Radioheads and stuff. But then it goes into like your Daily Mix 2 and 3, and they just don't know what to put because it's just so much stuff we listen to. It's like funny.
Please? Yeah, I'm a little bit, I'm jaded to like this, the creepiness level to some extent, because I've been working with like the big tech platforms and making content for a while now. So like, I understand that, they try to make the ads more personalizable because that makes the ads more valuable to the people who they're selling the ad space to. But yeah, there's all these issues of privacy that all of these tech companies have decided to turn around and say they care about your privacy. Like when friend of the show, Google, decides to make those pixel advertisements that say, we care about your privacy.
It's like, no, you don't. You care about having it.
I didn't buy a pixel because I expected Google to take care of my privacy. I bought it because I like the camera and I use incognito mode to give Google as little information about myself as possible. Anyways, and so we continue on our album spree with Future Islands, As Long As You Are. It is 11 songs long and 44 minutes long. And Future Islands, I did not expect. I mean, they've been making albums fairly sort of generally. Their first one, Wave Like Home, came out in 2008, and kind of ever since then, they've been making music pretty consistently, been on tour pretty consistently until like this year. And I've been making general, I guess you would call them synth pop, but after hearing like this album and also Everything, I don't know, I just had like an existential crisis with synth pop. I was like, what is this genre? Is it alternative? Is it?
Yeah, it's an awkward genre where you incorporate a lot of like 80s sounds, almost like MGMT-ish, with some of the stuff, but then you throw in like Franz Ferdinand sounds as well into the mix.
So it's just not poppy to me. No,
it's not poppy at all. So I would call it synth alternative is what I would call it.
Yes, you do, right? You do very much call it that. I do.
That's a perfect explanation for it, because some of this is definitely 80s inspired beeps, kind of like that fast new ordery pace in it, and then you have some other just straight alternative rock songs into there. But it's actually, it grew on me. At first listen, I did not like this album, mainly because the lead singer's voice is a little much for me.
Yeah, you have to be, his voice.
Like, it's almost like Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins. I mean, they're totally opposite voices, but it's something that you have, like, it takes you a little bit to get into. And then it's like, I think with the musicality of the album, the instrumentation is fantastic, production fantastic. And then that's when I got appreciation of that. And then that's the second listen through. I'm like, okay, I can get into this.
Yeah, when you get acclimated to the voice, it's very deep and sort of, it's very like smooth sounding, very good, but also just like not what you expect to hear in the genre. It almost feels like there are a lot of alternative songs where like a band will bring on someone with a really good voice, like Morgan Freeman, or someone like that. Mm-hmm. Fire Coming Out of the Monkey's Head, that was done, where like you bring on someone with like a really nice voice to tell a story. And that's just how Future Island sounds, because that's just the vocalist.
In general, yeah.
But again, the thing that can rub against the wrong way is that sometimes just almost sounds like it doesn't fit the kind of production you're doing. It's like, why is this like orator speaking in front of a synth?
Well, because the first song, Gladys, sounds exactly like that. And I still, that's the only song I don't like on this album, actually, is the opening track. I thought it was just kind of slow. The vocals were really kind of spoken almost and just felt really out of place and awkward. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I still can't really get into that. And then the next song, For Sure, is a solid song. Really good alternative song. And then his vocals get into it. And it's like this gorgeous like little beat that's going back and forth. It sounds like my favorite part of alternative rock. Right in there, where it's that experimenting just enough but staying within the bounds of the genre to push it to its limits and still have fun and get into it. Like, it feels like almost like back in high school, you know, 10 years ago, that style of alternative in the late aughts, early 10s.
You just saw my on-camera existential crisis in high school was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
Whoa. Okay, so we're moving on in the album. And yeah, I have this sort of synth alternative as a genre I very much like. I think this is like one of the bread and butter things for me. And going through a lot of this album, especially on the first listen, was just like, it's bland is almost the word I would want to start using, because it just didn't have anything to call out to me in the beginning, in the first listen. There were some like sort of higher points, like Born in a War, that felt like it had some moment to it. And it should be noted that a lot of these songs do have like a deeper sort of socio-political meaning.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Born in a War is almost like about the American culture war, where like you have not even just different political parties, but based on what sort of subculture you grow in America, you believe that your culture is constantly under threat by some other thing.
Yes.
And so it heightens political discourse in a way that this is one of those things where it's like, it's not just Trump that caused this. Like, America was just like this. But the idea that you're in this culture war constantly, and culture war is actually a Bill O'Reilly terminology, but that idea makes you almost like pit yourself against others very quickly within that society. And so it creates the idea of being born in a war, as that song sort of lays out. So there's like really good meaning within that. It wasn't until like the later end of the album where I started to get sort of my comforts back with it, but we can continue till I get there.
Well, because after Born in a War, you have I Knew You, which is like, it's a decent song. It slows down with I Knew You and City's Face, which are two songs which are okay. I don't dislike them, but they're okay. Just kind of streamline it a little bit. But then after City's Face, you have Waking, which is this gorgeous 80s beat into it, and it picks the album back up. And I really like that in that middle ground. After that, you have Painter, which is like, I would call it like your alternative pop, almost like The Killers. So that song was a little disappointing in there. This is the album. There's like there's good and bad. There's good and okay. So there's like a lot of like hits and misses within there. So there's a lot of talent in there for sure. Because after The Painter, you have Plastic Beach, which is a fantastic fucking song.
Yeah. I would even say like The Painter and Plastic Beach are like two pretty like good ones to kind of go into. Whereas The Painter, it's again a lot about like perception in American society. Out in the country, been around the world now. Out in the water, waving, not drowning. Was lost in the painting. Somebody don't know where, like. I think the artists were describing that if you're looking at clouds, for example, you can think it looks like something and your friend can think it looks like something else, but you're both perceiving the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that ultimate mantra that art is really subjective. It's in the eye of the beholder. Perhaps the creator knows the meaning, but perhaps the creator really doesn't. They're just putting it out into the world. And so that's kind of also just how it impacts with culture, because if you're Black and experiencing America versus if you're stereotypically white and experiencing America, those experiences look like they're the same, but they both those people perceive it in different ways. I think that's kind of like what the angle is trying to go into that, which is really cool. And Plastic Beach is more of like a personal image kind of song, more end. Very much not related to the Gorillaz album in any way.
Moonlight after that has is like a pretty simplified song where it's just easy drum beat, like airy vocals this time, and a great bass line in the back. And I think it's a really good song to have right after Plastic Beach. I think actually the second half of this album is pretty solid within there. And then like the last couple songs are good, just those out of the album, because like Thrill kind of gets into more of a chill beat, slower again, similar, and then Hit the Coast. It's like a perfect ending track, actually, I think, for it, because there's so much. A couple different styles of sounds and stuff, but I think it's almost like the XX sound of alternative rock in there, and I think it's a perfect ending track. So there's a lot of good in here. There's a lot of meh in it as well, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
Especially second listen through, and now kind of like going back into hitting and see what I like again still. There is some stuff in here that I'll take away from this album for sure and enjoy for a while.
Yeah. I do feel that, like, yeah, there are certain songs, Painter, Plastic Beach, Born in a War. You can take them as hit or miss. But you can... there is talent for sure from the Future Islands in this work, very clearly. My big critique is just like, as an album, it just didn't really make sense. It didn't.
No, it was very all over the...
It's a collection of songs.
Yeah, exactly. It was very all over the place. That was, again, that's what I talked about, where you have songs that are hit or miss that just didn't... Because there's a kind of that 80s groove beat. There's some of that, you know, solid synth alternative rock, and then there's slowing it down, there's deconstructing some of it, and then there's adding some things that shouldn't be there at the same time. So it's just, it's all over. So it's not very cohesive at all.
And they have all the elements to make, like, you can with that voice, you can make a really dope intro and, like, last two songs as an outro that gets on our, like, awards list for best album enders. And with this instrumentation, you have plenty of creative instrumentation to go around.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's just, like, sit down, make it fit together. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of upper echelon level that separates, you know, passable, decent artists who, like, have good discographies that go back to years and I think are generally all right, to, like, the super good upper echelon artists where, like, our critiques of them are really, like, barely critiques. It's just, like,
it's just nitpicky.
I would have done it this way, but no, like, this is a really big thing. It's just, like, as an album, I don't like this. But I like certain songs on here quite a lot.
I can understand that. So, Arbitrary Scale, again, is Kidnapped Political Leaders.
Actually, I will give this one to Gretchen Whitmer, because it's the most, like, you tried. Either that...
That's actually a really good saying. That's not bad. Or even better, the failed Venezuela coup that happened last year with, what was the Corps?
Silver Corps.
Silver Corps, with the Silver Corps militiamen, as I like to call them. Was,
you know, the Silver Corps Weekend Warriors.
Yes. Civil Corps Weekend Warriors who tried to do it and got caught by a fisherman. Yes, that's this album.
When the Venezuelan fisherman is busy torturing Jay Inslee.
That's so rough.
To interrupt the Venezuelan coup anyways. Yeah, that's that album. Moving on to the music business worldwide, Slim Pickens.
It sounds like you're saying KNX 1070 News Radio.
That's kind of the tone I'm going for. This is one of those things where, like, capitalism is going to vertically integrate itself into that BoJack Horseman joke where we're all going to Halliburton, Trader Joe's, like, Amazon Delta. So basically, Universal, the company, which I'll reprise part of my Dan from the Internet 20 video and reminding everyone that Universal Studios is a theme park and a music publishing group and a movie theater production group that is big enough on its own, but also merge with NBC, so they have those studios and those music and those radio shows, which would be big enough on its own, and then Comcast bought it.
Yes.
So
Comcast owns everything.
What I should really say is that Comcast is building a hotel.
Yes, exactly.
Comcast is building a hotel so that fans of Comcast music acts can go pay Comcast money to stay in this hotel while paying Comcast money to go to this concert venue to watch a Comcast-signed artist perform at the Comcast-signed microphone.
Everybody should get a Comcast shirt when they walk in. Should be like Silicon Valley where they all wear Hulu shirts and shit. Like
free Xfinity Wi-Fi will be provided.
Xfinity Wi-Fi, yeah.
No, so if I tried to read the story with like an ounce less cynicism. Yeah, Warner Music Group is piloting this idea with another company, Sync Music Group or something like that. I'm not sure. These all are dumb names. So basically, they're going to open hotels in Atlanta, Georgia, Biloxi, Mississippi, and Orlando, Florida. Slim Pickens. And the idea is they will have a one-stop shop of like room and board and food and the venue and everything like that all in one. Because right now, for a lot of people, if you do travel to concerts, you stay at a separate hotel and you get separate foods, whatever, and then you go to the theater, I mean, you go to the concert hall or whatever, and that's your thing. Yeah, they want to vertically integrate and just be all of that. They want all of that money so they don't have to share it.
Yeah, I like it and don't like it. I like it for like the convenience factor for consumers in a way. Because depending on how much everything is, it can end up being cheaper for a consumer and possibly for an act, depending. I'm not sure how Universal contracts work and everything. But then also, like, the evil conglomerate that is Comcast, fuck them. So
yeah, here's the thing that's going to happen with that, is that you in the classic economic arguments of do you allow companies to vertically integrate? Yeah, do you allow companies to vertically integrate and become monopolies or not?
Exactly, that's... The
argument always is, oh, well, we're making it easier for consumers. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I guess it is easy to whip out one app and pay for things at Amazon and Whole Foods and all these other things at the same time.
But it's a pain in the ass for everything else. Yeah, that's what I said. It's a double-edged sword in that regard.
And also, like, what are you doing to, like, it's to play this dumb argument of capitalism as though it has two sides of arguments and shouldn't be destroyed altogether? Where does competition happen if you don't like Comcast? Do you go to, was it Spectrum? And you have to wait for Spectrum to buy all of their media networks and
Please
ventures?
Please, God, don't. No, Spectrum, go away.
Oh, no.
Leave me alone.
I mean, we already kind of know what that looks like because AT&T owns Warner Media,
which is
HBO and also Warner Music Group. So all we need is like the AT&T Grand Casino in Trump Tower up in Las Vegas.
Can XL just like buy a random blown up hotel in the middle of England and just call it a day?
Yeah, I think...
And just all they're going to have is a tent outside.
Like one of those Saturday afternoon in the park pitching tents.
Yeah, maybe that's
like
what they're going to have. And then you're just going to have Adam Serpice just chilling there like, oi.
No, I think, and yeah, there's an interesting argument to be made. Like, look, Spotify is trying to become a music label. Apple Music has been curating...
Apple Music has been doing that for years. Yeah.
There's a lot of vertical integration happening where a bunch of different companies are figuring out like, oh, we made a lot of money. How do we continue spending this money to make more money? And this is now one of those ways.
The beautiful Boondocks episode of, don't you have enough money? No!
The other beautiful Boondocks episode where the announcer's going, Robert, how are you doing fucking up all your grandson's money?
I say, sir, but player, I'm fucking up all my grandson's money.
Hey, check it out. I got a car that turns into a boat. A boat! Okay.
Last album review.
Last album review is Reanimator by Everything Everything. It is 11 songs long, 45 minutes long, came out on September 11. And so I mainly point that out because 9/11 was an inside job. No, because we didn't review this when it came out immediately. Mm-hmm. So sometimes audio, sometimes albums kind of flow back into the theme of things as we can do them. So everything's really interesting. They're, again, like, they're in that synth pop genre, but what is synth pop? It's more like synth alternative.
Yeah, but they're almost like that bridge between kind of like R&B alternative, like that little bridge between those two, because they do that bump step, as I like to call it, where it's, you know, combining the two, basically.
Yeah. This we use the term like Franz Ferdinand, and sometimes I don't even know what we're describing, because I guess a lot of artists articulate this, but it's a Franz Ferdinand like style, in that it's like alternative rock and synth pop with like attitude.
And then they do Bon Iver's voice, or try to do Bon Iver's voice without doing it, which is my big critique. I hate when bands or whatever vocalists seeing falsetto when their falsetto is shit.
Yeah.
Because it's just really, really obvious and annoying. Because I like Bon Iver's music, but sometimes his voice even irks me, where it's like, can you do something else? And that was a big thing in this album, where it's kind of that high-pitched vocal that was going out, that airy, hipster-ish vocal that they do. A lot of artists do that. If done right, is very good. If done wrong, it's a nuisance.
But it's the kind of vocal you can tell that, like, this took 10 tries in the studio. This isn't, you're not going to get the sound.
I can't think of his name, the lead singer of Fleet Foxes says, you can fake a guitar solo, but you can't fake a voice. And goddamn, he is right. Robin Peckenhold, I got it.
That's the one.
So
Peckenhold,
okay. Whatever. Mr. Robin. That's what you're going to keep.
Mr. Robin's neighborhood.
Robin's neighborhood. That's the perfect point, though. You can fake certain things. You can fake instrumentation in a way, but with a voice, you can't. And that was I actually like the instrumentation's album a lot. It's just, the vocals were really just, I don't know, they irked me. Like, Planets, yeah. I thought the actual lyrics and everything to it was pretty cool. Instrumentation was cool, but just don't do falsetto for the whole fucking song.
Well, it's like that part, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like the whole thing going over. Like, Tom York can barely do falsetto, but that's because that's all his voice has left.
And like, there's a certain characteristic to some singers and the way their voice ages when they're doing lighter things. Damon Albarn, not hitting those high notes anymore. Very little. He usually has a backup choir to do that, or he this is the song where he's not running around and dancing on stage like an idiot. This is the song where he's sitting down at the piano, where he's able to like take hits off the ventilator real quick before he's able to really sing that note out. Because it's, I mean, falsetto is, and there's a study how like falsetto, this really, really high note of singing, was really popular in like the 70s and 80s along with disco.
Oh, well, you could hear that for sure.
Yeah, fell
Earth,
down.
Earth, Wind & Fire, you could.
Yeah, absolutely. There, yeah. And Michael Jackson's like the big sort of vestige of that took it to pop. Then you sort of had like sort of a decrease with that to the 90s.
90s
and then,
with grunge, and it's the polar opposite.
Yeah, resurgence of the falsetto voice in the early aughts with like B.O.B. and all those. And now it's just a thing where like, it's just assumed that every frontman is going to do like some falsetto thing for their hook, as though like it sounds better. And I think you can sure do that, but A, you're going to get a lot of people who sound really shitty when they're doing their falsetto.
It's very, very difficult to do and to control.
And B, you're going to end up, if everyone's shooting for the sound, then everyone's going to sound
the same. As another thing I like to say on your face is, you know how 21 Savage does his little spoken word thing, which he very rarely does. He does that on purpose because he can do it in a song or two, but if you keep doing it over and over again, then it loses its effect.
Yeah.
Like, example, Arch Enemy is a good song for the first half. The second half, like the chorus and stuff, it goes back up to that falsetto and just gets distracted. So it's just something that I couldn't escape. So it's musicality of a production is solid. It's actually very cohesive as an album. All the songs flow together pretty well. I like the lyrics on it. It's just that.
Yeah, I can get you with that. Like, I think it would have benefited from like backup vocalists or something
Either
else to
that,
kind
or
of help, because
you just change the or you just change the notes within the vocals. I mean, it's not something, because within the musicality, if it wasn't like they were playing Sigur Rós, where like you can only do falsetto in it because that's what fits in the music.
yeah.
But you could do so many other things within it because they're very, like, you could tell they're talented. Like, they have a lot of stuff that they could do within it. So it's just something that I think is going to pull them back
But
a
I
little
can
bit.
tell, especially with Arch Enemy, which was one of my favorite songs from this album, particularly. Like, especially in that second part we're referencing, he wants to, like, or at least they want to produce that part with, like, the chorus needs to have better delivery that second go around than the first time around. So I'm saying you could do that with vocal layering, you can do that
No,
with
yeah.
a number of different ways that, and the vocal layering can include, like, having a choir, having just, like, a higher singer, backup singer to help with that. So you create some sort of depth in that second chorus delivery. And we're kind of on the same page here. I'm just thinking, if I were in the room producing music with
Yeah,
these
that's
people, it's
me.
like these are the things I would be leading them to, as opposed to going it on alone with the falsetto, because it's very hard to do, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's something that it's like my favorite thing, which is the boom clap snap. It's almost like that where a lot of artists are keeping doing it. It's almost like when a couple of the alternative bands in the mid-10s did started putting trap snare in their stuff. It's just
Yeah.
stuff that it's almost like a fad that a lot of white hipster dudes love to do for alternative, and you'll still hear it a little bit, but hopefully it'll start to die down a bit because it's, yeah, unless you know how to do it, unless you do it right, it's
Yeah.
very distracting. But over my critique, it's a decent album. I
Yeah.
did actually enjoy it with the musicality, with everything else. I really like the instrumentation. I like the infusion of that pop and B plus alternative plus synth alternative, kind of like mixing a
It's
bunch of
lively.
sounds into it. There's a lot of good production in it where it's all like there's a couple bands who have tried it before this year, but I think they almost nailed it to within that sound for the early 20s now. Where I
Yeah.
think if alternative kind of goes into this direction, it's not a bad thing. I think it's a good thing to experiment with it and improve upon it, do a little bit more, obviously, the vocals and then some more of the production of getting in hooks or whatever you want to just put in more, I think is good. But
Wow, Sean, this looks like the introduction to our Synth Pop is Dead conversation.
Synth pop is dead. Right.
I don't want to levy that on everything in
I'm a
future
name dog
albums.
Levy. I'm gonna kick it every time it rains.
I'm gonna put a pin in that conversation because I need to tell you something off air. This is hilarious. But anyways,
Okay. Kidnap political leaders is our Jesus Christ. It's
arbitrary
arbitrary scale.
scale.
Oh my God. This is Jesus Christ.
Wait, I'm yes. This is the Augusto Pinochet in Chile. Back when his former helicopter pilot admitted several times that he threw
Oh,
political prisoners out of the
that's
helicopter
right. I forgot. His
just
pilot's
into
like,
the ocean.
whoa.
I'm sorry, anytime you add a hel and maybe this is just me, but like anytime you add a helicopter to something,
It's
you
just
mean
like
absolute
beautiful,
business.
right? This
Like
is.
when you're shooting feral hogs from a helicopter, when you're I'm gonna
This is Hillary Clinton cackling that Muammar Gaddafi got Gaddafi'd.
We
We came,
came, he
he
saw,
saw,
he got
he
stabbed in the
died.
ass. Ha ha
Yeah, that's what this album is. Because that laugh is the falsetto. I'm sorry, everything. Y'all are a decent band. Like,
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the same with
I'm not
Future.
hating on
It's the
you.
same with Future Islands. It's
Yeah,
like
like I'm
y'all are
not hating
decent.
on
It's
you.
just that there are, as someone who is a synth pop fan, someone who really likes this genre, I am very concerned with the way that some of the bands are sort of just like handling it, especially some of the ones who did it really well a decade ago. And I'm seeing enough new taking it forward. I mean, Gorillaz, that song machine is a whole like different thing with how synth pop has evolved. But I'm seeing the evolution going right in some ways, and I'm seeing it go fall short in other ways, and that's really disappointing. But yeah, that's that.
So this is a very Sean-centered, last thing on Audio Face. Something I was going to put in here, but you put the end, so thank you very much for indulging me. So, new Joy Division and New Order podcast is going to be coming out soon, and it's going to be it's going to feature a lot of people, which is the big interesting thing. So obviously it's going to have all the surviving band members, which is interesting because Peter Hook and Bernard Sumner don't like each other, and they really don't speak that often unless there's a lawyer present. So there's that. So that's going to be interesting, but they're going to go over
Gallagher shit.
Deadass on that Gallagher shit. Because of royalties. But anyways, they so Peter Hook, Bernard Summers, Stephen Morris, and Gillian Gilbert, they're all going to be doing like a synopsis of the band from when they were Joy Division, when they started in the 70s, and then obviously when they became New Order after the death of Ian Curtis. But also is going to have feature interviews with some special guest musicians. You're going to have Damon Albarn.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Damon Albarn. Extreme friend of the show, Johnny and Colin Greenwood.
And super deluxe friend of the show, Bono.
Super deluxe. and Patreon of the show, Liam Gallagher, Johnny fucking Marr, and Karen O.
Patreon patron at the $1,000 tier, Liam Gallagher.
Also, some appearances will be about Hot Chip, Perry Farrell, Thurston Moore, Pet Shop Boys, Honey Dijon, which is a, like, that's
been a minute.
That's like Deep State, which is, if you know your EDM producers. Anyways, Anna Cavalier, Virgin Alba, and a couple other people. So it's going to be interesting to see how it is because Joy Division, New Order, they have pioneered music for a lot of groups. I mean, the reason why Tom dances mental on stage is because of Ian Curtis.
Yeah.
If you watched Joy Division videos of them doing like daytime stuff in England. And they pioneered a sound for a bunch of people and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, and New Order still makes music that's actually pretty good. So, yeah.
The new podcast, Transmissions, The Definitive Story, should be, yes. The first episode premieres October 29th, so by the end of this month. It should be available wherever you get podcasts, including Audio Face, including where you get this podcast, Audio Face. So it could be Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you just make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of our podcasts. We're doing a lot of bonus episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe one day we will have Damon Albarn or Bono or Ian Curtis's hologram on the podcast.
Kind of great. Ian Curtis hologram. Oh, man. Oh, please. That's one hologram. I don't want that hologram.
That would be such an Eric Andre interview. Anyways. This has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for listening and watching with us. You can find the show on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. There will be posting more, eventually, content from the show. If you don't want false promises, then go to youtube.audioface.show where pretty much every single week... every single week, every single day of the week, we have videos from the podcast that you can check out that are super fun. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. And we have a really exciting October coming up. I usually don't jinx myself by announcing the upcoming albums coming out, but next week should be Biba Doobie along with Open Mic Eagle. Mm-hmm. So make sure you listen to the bonus episode. And of course, later this month, we have Gorillaz, Sam Smith, and for better or worse, Major Lazer.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Can't wait to see you on the next episode, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Bye. Kidnap political officials.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to have happened, but like... Gavin Newsom getting hogtied by PETA for allowing fracking to happen would be a really funny kind of image in my head.
And him getting hanged by Mickey Mouse. Because he's like, Disneyland is not in my plans at all. I'm like, all right.
Everybody's in the House of Mouse plans. Ho-ho!